It is Thursday the 1st of March, and this is episode 109 of Digital Outbox. I've done it again. It's 109. What happens to 109 when I try and read a screen? Anyway, welcome along. I'm Chris, and Ian's with me. Hello, Ian.
Good evening. And I was laughing at you, smiling away during the intro, thinking he's going to interrupt. And then you started with your 109s, and I was like, he's done it again. And I know it's going to send him into a tizzy.
It did. Threw me into a little tizzy fit. Let's start with some quick updates on some previous stories we've done. Ian, you got a couple for us.
Yes, I love the Elytro, and you kind of slagged me off for liking the Elytro. Like, really? You'd buy a Elytro? And I think you are right. The reviews have come out, and they are really good, but it just I can sum it up as in, like, a one-trick pony or gimmick, I think, is the best. I read the reviews this morning or this afternoon or this evening, whenever. And
so what are people saying wrong about it then? This is the one with the multiple focus points, yeah?
Yeah, basically it's good for one type of photo.
The camera with Michael.
You know, so already a lot of the demo photos are all, you've got to have somebody, you know, not in focus, but you've got to have, you know, like multiple focal points or else it's almost wasted.
You know? But that's the whole point of it.
I know, but that's what I mean by that kind of one trick pony. And also the fact that you need flash. So anybody wanting to see it, you know, you have to embed it as a flash object.
Yeah, that's a big fail, isn't it?
You know, and there's no editing tools. And I know that'll all come and it's just the first release, but instantly I was just like, oh, I wouldn't spend $500 on that.
No, that's a lot of money.
Yeah. And the second quick update is we mentioned Google Maps were going to start to charge for their larger customers. And we wondered if that would change the fortunes of things like OpenStreetMaps. And it has. Foursquare this week. They've been working in the background and they've made a big move to OpenStreetMaps. So they've got some lovely, lovely looking maps, only on the web at the moment, because on the mobile devices, the maps all serve via APIs.
It's just too baked in, isn't it?
Yeah. But it does make me think that would Apple move from Google as part of their API this year?
Interesting. And also shows that OpenStreetMaps is now mature enough that a big company like Foursquare can...
It's mature... What I noticed in the comments, it's mature in like Europe and America, but there's a lot of South American people complaining that the maps are awful, you know, in like big cities like Mexico, they just said, and a lot of people were saying, well, fix it yourself then. That's the power of OpenStreetMaps.
But that's where the clout of a massive company such as Google can go and fill in those gaps without, not without too much effort, but you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah.
You see, they've got the resources to do that. Anyway, onto the news for this week. And big one, really, has been Mobile World Congress going on in Barcelona. Basically, I didn't pay too much attention to it through the week, but the outcome of it is that there's quite a lot of nice, sexy devices coming out.
Absolutely.
Mostly, and on the phone front, really. It's been, you know, lots of phones trickle out, but this has been sort of a number of big-hitting devices. But we also had... sort of keynote speeches and stuff, and so we've got some Android stats for you. We love our stats here, and basically they're activating 850,000 Android devices per day.
Scary.
That's ridiculous. That's bonkers. I mean, that's including a total of, so that brings them to a total of 300 million devices and 12 million tablets. So I know Apple have got a massive market, but you know, with market share, but this is not an insignificant number going on here.
No,
pretty incredible.
No, I've got visions of, you remember the James, what was it, Moonraker, when you've got the little satellite in space and you get the big rocket coming up behind about to kind of engulf it. That's the way I feel about it. It's all these other, you know, bigger rocket coming and going. Arr.
Except for it's a conglomerate built.
Yes.
Rocket. Oh, yeah, you know the point I was trying to make. Anyway, they reckon these figures aren't massaged in any way. They're genuine activations, only one per device, etc.
And not including...
It doesn't count the Kindle Fire.
No, that's what I couldn't believe, because I thought, surely it must do, especially in the tablet figure.
We still haven't had sort of a surefire figures on the Kindle Fire either. We don't know their sales figures at the moment, but from all reports, they're doing okay. As you'd expect for a device that's so cheap and so funky. What else did he say?
A lot of it was just a whole lot of stats. They say they're going to double down on tablets this year. So he admitted that, you know, although they've sold 10, although they're powering 12 million tablets, that the tablet market have not been successful. And Samsung kind of backed it up. They said at the show that they've basically failed so far in the tablet market, and that they need to.
Samsung's are the most popular Android tablets by far, I think, is there.
And what's interesting, was making some comments about how that people aren't associating, you know, the Android brand isn't associated with tablets, and it's an issue for them, and they need to resolve it. And it's like, but why is it an issue in tablets and not phones, when it's all fragmented so many, behind so many different manufacturers, especially with all the different front ends? And I think, you know, Ice Cream Sandwich is supposed to, you know, give that unified front end, especially on the tablet side. I don't know where it's failing.
The thing I get the impression of is that Android at the moment, and it could well change going forward when they actually get this all under control. But I reckon you buy an Android phone with the operating system that you're going to live on that phone with until the end of its life. You then get rid of it and you get the next one that's got the next operating system. That's the feel I've got at the moment. Because even the Google phones haven't been updated to
and the there's even the brand new Droid came out. I was watching a review show last week. The brand new Droid, it's only out this week, is coming out with Gingerbread.
And they nearly all said that they were going to come out with Gingerbread and then update shortly after release. But we know what that said in the past. It means it's not shortly after release. It's quite a long time after release. So that was a kind of feature that there must be something in Ice Cream Sandwich that's causing something to go wrong. Anyway, so that's kind of, I mean, we have had lots of tablets announced at the conference, but none of them really stood out, did they?
No.
It was all about the phones, really. So let's have a
and some of the phones were, I thought, amazing. Just thought this looked really, really good. So
let's go through.
Yeah,
some.
First one was the Sony Xperia P. Which was a unibody aluminium handset, 4-inch display, but it was using something different display-wise. It was using what Sony have called white magic. I couldn't say that without grinning. I was thinking, can I keep that going? No, white magic.
Nope.
And it's not, they're not too fussed, and it's only a dual-core processor. It's running Gingerbread, but I mean, it looked fantastic, and the actual screen looked fantastic.
It's funny how it actually looks a bit more like a Windows phone. I don't know whether it's the slightly squared off thing, but the good bits about the Windows phone, you know, because you know, the Windows phones, given their due, most of them actually look quite good.
But it was almost like that edge-to-edge screen almost.
Yes,
you know, it just looked really nice. And that's out second quarter this year, so a really, really good phone. And there was also a smart dock, and you could send your, you know, almost like the ear display stuff, you could put your content on your TV. So that looked really nice. HTC... almost did a kind of rebranding, almost like a start again. So they're kind of putting their effort behind this HTC One, and there's a whole lot of different One series concepts, and they've also spent a lot of time redesigning in their software that they stick on top of. Is it Sense that they put on top of all their
Sense UI?
Yep. So that seems to have been rethought, and they had a couple of really good models. The top of the range is the HTC One X, and this again, it's a big old phone.
The specs you're just about to read out, if you closed your eyes and went back a couple of months, this was a laptop, right?
Apart from the 4.7 inch, but yeah.
notebooks were getting that small.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, I mean, but this is a 4.7 inch and it's a 720p super LCD 2 panel. And I mean, certainly from the people's comments, they said it was the best screen they'd seen. It was bright, it was crisp. And no matter what angle, it was readable, and they thought it was excellent. But it's got a quad-core Tegra chip on it, 1 gig of RAM, 8-megapixel camera. I think the best bit, it is coming with Ice Cream Sandwich and Sense 4 on it. So I'm not too sure about, you know, I'm sure some people will be sitting there, you know, purists saying, oh, I'm not too sure about having Sense on top, but I think having Ice Cream Sandwich is a big step because so many phones still don't have it.
Yeah, it's a selling point as much as anything. But, I mean, one thing HTC haven't been good at is supporting Europe. They've definitely focused US. We haven't got a lot of their phones coming over here.
So I think
we've
Orange,
kind of had Samsung doing the same kind of thing over
exactly.
Where they've missed out in America. So it's kind of a tit for tat. But HTC have released some nice bits of hardware, which we've never seen.
And Orange and O2 are definitely carrying these phones.
Excellent.
And that's
good news.
A couple of months away. You know, so that's, you know, very, very soon. And the One S is the, I guess, the kind of mid-range model. And the, interestingly, both them, the Verge and Engadget, actually preferred the design of this. Although the other phone had better specs, this was slightly smaller at 4.3 inches. It had that Pentel display that we've mentioned before, which you can kind of see other pixels coming through if you look quite closely. But it was the actual, as it felt in the hand, it's an aluminium unibody again, and it felt amazing. And the fact it's a kind of, I guess...
It looks quite chunky in the pictures and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't know. They just said it felt right.
Yeah, I mean, as I say, it looks chunky, but actually looks like a nice solid bit of kit.
So, yeah, I mean, nothing wrong with that. One of the guys at work had a much thinner phone than the iPhone, but it just felt really thin. It felt like, I'll break this. I'll snap this in my pocket. And I think the last... Oh, no, there's a couple more. The crazy one. One thing we should have said at the start, this was almost like an Android show. There was nothing else really there. Nokia had a couple of Windows phones, but they're all low level. Windows phone. It was all kind of low spec ones. But their big splash was the 808 PureView with its 41 megapixel camera. For the third week in a row, I thought it was April the 1st. I don't know what it is this year, but tech is making me think I'm in a different planet.
I mean, and the camera on the back of this is huge comparatively. You know, it's got actually a kind of a nodule that sticks out that carries the lens and whatever. And a little flash.
It looked like double the thickness of an iPhone with an eyeball stuck on it.
it reminds me of those kind of iRobot.
Yeah, absolutely. Bizarrely, but it's not on Windows, so it's using Symbian.
No, this is it's very strange. Yeah, Symbian, where did that come from? They're still around. Oh dear. But I mean, it's got a 41 megapixel sensor, but it doesn't actually take 41. It's not designed to store 41 megapixel photos, because quite frankly, you'd probably store one and that'd be it.
Yes.
But it uses that data to then make better photos for downsampling, and the biggest factor of that is digital zoom. It enables you to digital zoom in with having a still reasonable size picture without any of the pixelation, because you've got those pixels available.
Yes.
So that's their kind of thinking behind it. So and it'd be interesting to see how these photos come out, because that's an awful lot of data to you know.
The sample photos looked really good. I mean, I'm really impressed. But then I think every phone that comes out, you're really impressed with the sample photos. It's actually how it takes it in. You know, low light in a room when you just want to use it, is it quick and all that?
But it's got a dedicated flash just above the lens as well. So it looks like, I mean, this is definitely the phone if you're a camera person who just happens to want a phone.
Well, at least it did something different. You know, if you look at all the other phones, they're all much of a muchness. They're all 8 megapixel cameras and, you know, just the varying qualities of screen and CPUs and battery life and LTE. This was something different. Samsung didn't really show too much. There was new tablets. So there's Galaxy Tab and the Galaxy Note, both of them 10.1. The Note comes with a stylus, and there was a slight differentiation in spec. But again, it just felt...
There's another big step in the Note, which hasn't been reported on widely, and that is that you can have multiple windows running multiple apps, I believe.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, so that's quite a big differentiator. Yep. Again, it's because it's got so many feature lists, it's sort of been missed, but I'm sure I picked up on a couple of places where, yeah, you could run two apps side by side in Windows. I mean, whether that's the direction we should be heading for these tablet devices, it's hard to say, but at least it's showing a different direction and maybe we'll pick up. But it's kind of going a bit more towards the Windows side of things, which I think Apple have probably proved by now it was a good thing to move away from.
I think at the time it was good to move away from. I don't know whether when we get to better battery life and better CPUs, it might be...
There's plenty of times when it's annoying switching between two things, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
And you touched on how Samsung have more kind of focused in Europe. The one phone that kind of stole the show without being announced, and it wasn't anything from Apple, was the Samsung Galaxy S3. This was previewed or rumoured on Boy Genius, who, as we know, I mean, you know I love him. I think that they're... The amount of bad tips that site gives out. I'm still waiting for Blu-ray and the Mac. Every year, I'm thinking, promise it. But this...
We should put that rumour out this year.
the crazy thing in this, so this is a 1.5 gigahertz quad core, but it was a 4.8-inch full 1080p resolution screen.
I mean, that's bonkers. I mean, the thing is, the S2, I mean, I see that phone everywhere at the moment. Loads of people have that phone. So it's clearly caught attention, that one, as a cheaper alternative to the iPhone. And this one just looks like it takes it the next step. Whether that pushes it outside of your cost brackets, I mean, that is, a lot of resolution to fit in.
And
the
final one that kind of popped out was the Pad Phone. You quite like the look of the Pad Phone.
Yeah, so it's a weird name, isn't it? It's the Asus Pad Phone. So this is, I spotted this one, or like this one, for very different reasons, and that's just because it's more of the concept than anything. So it's a phone with nothing remarkable stat-wise, but it's quite a large screen, 8 megapixel camera, etc. But it's designed to actually dock into a bigger tablet, so it actually runs the tablet, so it sits inside the screen, and that screen in turn is also designed to hook onto a keyboard. So effectively you've got your three portable devices in one sort of big unit, and it sort of solves the form factor problem, and it's also a kind of sensible step in that if you take the back off an iPad ever, effectively, it's just an iPhone with a bigger battery and a bit more, space in there. But effectively, that, you know, there's a couple more chips or whatever. But effectively, even the form factor inside is pretty much iPhone size. So it's just it's an interesting concept, I think, of hooking this thing in. Maybe, you know, you could just hook that into your TV or hook it here. You know, if you've got the processing power, just whack it into whatever form factor you actually want to end up using it for. So let's stay on phones for a bit, because the EU has decided they're going to put a more stringent cap on roaming charges.
Woohoo.
Around Europe. Yes, exactly. So I mean, they've already got a cap in place, 35 cents per minute, effectively, but they want to reduce that down to 15 cents per minute for calls, reduce it to 4 cents for a text message, and also reduce the data costs by a ton. So only 20 cents per megabyte for data. So obviously this is, consumers are saying yes, because it's complete rip-off at the moment.
Well, not a week goes by that I don't see a tweet from somebody that or something to O2 saying, you know,
yeah,
how have I spent £30 in like half a day?
Yeah. And then obviously you've got the industry and all the big telecoms companies going, this is gonna ruin us. Everyone's going to starve. Children will die. The world will stop. You can't possibly do this. Now, I do feel for them in that, you know, they're getting things imposed on them, which they would say that, you know, the market should control. But unfortunately, the market's not open and therefore it can't control it.
Exactly.
You need regulation.
Exactly. So I'm getting hideous data charges imposed on me. And the best quote I thought was Vodafone, and it's down to me to pronounce this name. I'm sure you shied away from this deliberately. Victoria Colleo,
<good luck. laughs>
he wasn't happy at this. So even before the vote went through, he does Europe need employment or does Europe need rate cuts? We should stop having this continuous intervention in prices and let the industry reinvest the money. He then went on to describe what he saw as hell. A worst case scenario in which profits fall, reinvestment is impossible, development ceases, jobs are cut, and a whole range of related industries, media, software, entertainment, all fail. And
how much did profit did Vodafone make? So over the last 6 months,
$12 billion.
Oh my god, they're gonna run out of cash anytime soon.
I tell you, that sounds like hell to me.
And you know what? Most of the money doesn't get reinvested, okay? Some of it does. Most of it goes to shareholders, because that's what they all chase. So it's all a load of rubbish. I mean, okay, understand business situations where you don't want to see your profits going. You don't want to become a kind of ongoing business. You want to still keep those initial costs. But anyway, I think they could, certainly for roaming charges, where there's no reason really to charge that much money.
And even worse is the fact that how much data does a text use up?
Yeah, well, it's bytes, isn't it?
But I mean, it's ridiculous.
Several bytes, and that's it. and they, if they all end up, you know, letting each other use their own networks for these roaming bits, then it wouldn't be a problem anyway, would it? There you go. Windows 8 consumer preview. So Windows 8 went through its first beta stages, but now we're on to the later, more reliable previews, as they would call them. And you have used it.
I have.
You have it installed.
I've done, much to everybody's amazement.
Yes, that doesn't amaze me.
No, certain colleagues were like, why?
But then that's their short-sightedness, because they're missing it. If they're not using it and seeing it, they're kind of missing out.
Absolutely. So Wednesday morning, at the same mobile show that we've just been talking about, Microsoft did a big launch of Windows 8. Or not so much a launch, but a launch of their consumer preview. I'm trying to remember what the last preview was called. It was some sort of...
It's probably just release candidate.
I can't remember what it was. The big thing is, lots of video content, lots of good, demos of what they're showing, but they also made it available, so anybody can download it. You can, if you're on Windows, you can download a little exe, which will work out what the best option is, and then download the best option for you. If you're wanting to either, just do a rebuild somewhere or do a VM, so the VM route's the route I went down, you can just download the ISO. So the ISO's already been downloaded over 1 million times in a day. So lots of interest for something that's, it's only been out 24 hours.
And it's not even a product. It's, the preempt to a product. But there's a lot of people talking a lot of good stuff about it.
I think it's really nice. I'm really quite
impressed.
There's
a buzz around Microsoft again. Woo!
But they're doing something different. Instead of just, cloning, I think Windows 7 was a massive step in the right direction. Vista felt like a clone of how can we copy some features from elsewhere but still retain an XP feel. Whereas Windows 7 was, no, we need to be different. We need to start. And they actually, I think they brought in some Windows management that put some of the Apple...
There's no comparison between the two. I hate Apple Windows management. I love Windows management.
And you'll see, my pick later on kind of addresses some of that.
That might be of interest to me.
Yes. I guess the only issue is that it still feels a very split. Windows 8 feels like a really split operating system now. It feels like...
Yeah, I think it's worthwhile recapping. I know that we touched on it when it first got released, but they've got rid of the kind of start menu or start button, and now it's almost like a start screen, isn't it? It's like a whole different side to the PC, which is kind of tablet interface. Imagine a Windows Phone interface.
It's picked up that Metro UI. So the Metro UI that's on Windows Phone and is also now on Xbox is now your kind of start screen on Windows 8. And it's all tiles, and they refresh really quickly. But also you can do quite a lot of, see the things like quickly checking the web and quickly checking email, quickly messaging somebody. I quickly want to see photos. I quickly want to share it. And we do quite a lot of that, commonly. You can do all that from that kind of start screen. And it's actually quite informative. There's a lot of information.
Does it feel fleshed out enough is what I would be worried about. Or is it just always going to be a switch back and forward? Because the best thing about the iPad is you just open it up, you go into where you want to get the information, and then you come back out again and leave it. And it's a really instantaneous thing.
I think it's too early to tell. I don't think you can tell straight. And I mean, I'm on a VM. The touch is a bit wonky. And there's other things that's a bit wonky as well. I don't think it works well portrait. What they're encouraging people to do is always use landscape. I think for a lot of people that'll be fine. But there are some apps.
For most people, they won't have any devices to have portrait on.
No, but I mean, you need to remember that this is the big kind of tablet hope for Microsoft. I mean, there are really no Windows tablets out there right now. They've lost two and a half years.
I wonder whether they're going to just have the Metro part of this on a tablet, or whether they will still have Windows buried under there.
And that wasn't clear. The only thing that I kind of picked up was around about the ARM side. So I think a lot of people are focused that Windows 8 is coming to ARM processors for the first time. But what's interesting is people have been speculating, what does it really mean? Will you be able to run Windows apps on it? Will they need to be recompiled? Will it run through emulation? Will it only run that Metro UI? Will it run both? And there was some tidbits out around that won't come with the kind of management side of things, which I think instantly locks it out of a lot of enterprises. The enterprises rely on that remote management capability. If I look at how we lock down our desktops and everything's remotely done, and remotely deployed, that's kind of gone from the ARM side. So I think that will lock it out from a lot of people. And I still think most of the tablets are just going to rely on that Metro UI, and that's it.
Well, I think they have to, and from the looks of the videos, they've done some things that look nice and done well. They've obviously learned a lot from their phone as well.
Absolutely.
So it potentially could work very nicely, and having a bit more space for their tiles actually could really suit it.
I think so. A couple of quickies just before we move on. They talk about charms, which I think is a horrible name.
I still think it's horrible. But I thought it was horrible the first time I heard it, and it's still horrible.
But basically, you swipe to the right edge, and you get these charms, and basically it's a set of shortcuts. So you can easily share. You know, I've got a photo, swipe to the right, share. You know, and so it's keeping a kind of clean UI, you're focusing the photo, but when you want to bring this in, and you can easily send that content to email, Twitter, whatever, or send it to your SkyDrive. So Cloud, their big push is SkyDrive, and we've talked about SkyDrive. SkyDrive a couple of times, and I think it's 25 gig that gives you, so it's a fair old chunk of space in the cloud, and they are building it up as an iCloud / Dropbox / all the Google Apps competitor. There is some healthy competition in that market now.
Yeah, the best thing they can do is just integrate that without any real options to go anywhere else.
and it feels like that, and I guess that's what will be interesting is will Dropbox be easily integrated into a charm? You know, and that's there's an app store now, so that's another big change for Windows, which doesn't currently have an app store. And the apps in the preview, there's loads of them there that are free to use during the preview. So it'll be interesting to, and I've hardly scratched the surface on those. Xbox Live is there. It's a bit unusual to see it actually called Xbox Live.
Yeah, because they've got the Windows Live and all that kind of
thing. I think the whole Windows Live thing's disappearing. It's Xbox Live, and there's a couple of games here that you can play. And I think the App Store, even though there's all the stats about, you know, people on Windows don't buy apps, I think that's changing. I think it's changing with the whole App Store idea on, you know, an iPhone.
You know why it's changing is because apps are charged now at much cheaper rates than they used to be.
You know, and
they used to be 30 quid minimum, and now people are willing to say, you know, sell things for 3-4 quid, and you don't think about that.
And you will have a punt, and even if there's not the same percentage, there's 500 million users out there of Windows. You just don't have that big market share on Mac, so I think it's massive. You're going to get a whole lot of developers coming over to that. One other thing I thought was really nice, if you use Mac, you're used to the kind of hot corners, you know, so you can do expose and stuff and all that kind of good stuff. They have that in Windows. You can, I'll get this wrong because I've only played with it a little, but I think it's like top left corner, and you can easily flip to the last app you use. And if you keep on flipping it, so it's almost like the kind of full screen view you're getting on a Mac. So you get the full screen view on your tablet or your Windows 8. And flick up to the top, and you just flip between all your different apps really quickly,
like turning pages.
And it works really well. Mm-hmm. So I think this is going to be a really good release. I just see when you swap to desktop, it does jar. You do feel like
all this newness, and then you scrape back. And
it feels like
Windows
you've
7.
Shut down an app. It feels like you've stepped out of a really nice app into Windows.
Well, to be honest, that's kind of what it is. Yeah, in a strange way. I mean, But then again, if you've got a computer, a lot of the time you might be using it with the Metro stuff, but being able to go back to do work on it or something, then it's nice that it's all there, I guess. And it doesn't really look any different. So Windows is pretty much, I'm sure they've changed bits here and there, but effectively it is Windows 7 as we know it, which is a great operating system.
So I think well played so far, Microsoft. Mm, well played. Yep,
definitely. Right, Twitter figure out revenues. They've been going for a while now, so they've just figured out how they're going to make some money. And they're going to do it by having basically in-depth search. So they're going to allow people to search back through 2 years' worth of tweets, and they are going to attach to those searches, attach to tweets, demographics, impact, and things like that. They're calling impact their clout score. So I guess that's how much it spreads around, how much it gets retweeted, favorited, and all that kind of stuff. I guess it's going to be interesting for, industrial corporate users, but it's I don't know, meh.
It's just a shame as me as a user only get 7 days of bloody search because they're rubbish.
Well, now you can pay and get more.
I'm not a big enterprise user.
No, but you can go pay the money if you want. I guess they have got a lot of data there, and data's always worth money, and they're figuring out how they're going to release that to people. What I quite like about it is how they call all their different things, all these weird names like fire hose and all number of other weird stuff. Anyway, are we that excited by this? Not really.
No, no. I'm just annoyed. I've always been annoyed by Alexa. See, I used to love the Google Twitter search. Worked really well. And to me,
maybe that's one of the reasons why they moved out of the Twitter to me, deal with Google.
I think it is. You know, just back out of that, and then we can sell it through DataSift. Cox. Yeah.
This was an interesting story, one that affected me. The first I heard about it was an email into my inbox from Game saying, you know your pre-order that you pre-ordered blooming ages and ages ago? Well, we're not stocking... we're not going to stock Mass Effect 3. I was like, what? Game? A retailer? Probably the biggest one we've got, or most well-known one, not going to stock Mass Effect 3. And it turns out they're just not stocking EA games anymore because they're going through really hard times and they don't want to sign up to EA's credit agreement that they have to sign up to get stock.
Yeah.
I guess they have zero cash, basically. EA weren't willing to bend. But they seem like they're in real stick. They're just saying that it's just... Effectively, they're saying we have to not stock games in order to survive.
Well, it almost looks like it's... I don't want to see the beginning of the end, but it's...
It's got to be. It can't be anything but...
I just think there's... I can only speak for around about Glasgow. They're oversaturated. There's too many stores. They do not need the amount of stores that they've got.
Every single city has... I don't know, 3-4. And you know what? They all sell games at £5 more than you can buy online.
And that's a great point. Somebody tweeted before this story broke, somebody tweeted in the morning, they went into Game in Edinburgh and they wanted to buy a Vita. So it was a Vita plus, I guess, a couple of games and whatever. And it was £40 more, or 30 or £40 more than Game's price online. So the chap was like, come on, you're selling it online for that price. Oh, and they got the old bricks and mortar. Bricks and mortar, we need to pay for rates and rent and all that kind of good stuff, so we can't sell it like that. And the guy was like, fine, I'll go and order it from Amazon, which is cheaper than either in here or on your online store, and I'll get it tomorrow. Sodgy.
Yep.
You know, for the sake of one day, you're not going to rip me off. And I think that it was going to happen.
Because companies, I mean, we need to be worried about this to a certain extent, because what do we do when our high streets don't have shops?
A lot of people still like to try games and demo products, and where do I get to feel a Vita if I can't just pop into
this is a bit of a sidetrack, but I predicted ages ago that we were going to have high streets that would have generic stores that just stock products for you to hold and touch and feel, and then modules and pods and your own connections to go and buy them for wherever you wanted to go and buy them. I think they might all... flock together and just try and do something like that. Like a massive department store, but you don't buy there, you buy online.
And what I was shocked at was Game's stock price fell 20%.
Well, of course it did.
But the stock price fell 20% and it was at 5p. So it is that low. That's why I didn't realise.
Yeah, they really are in big problems. But, you stop stocking games and that's real.
And expect, EA games, if you look at last year's sales, you've got all your big titles.
EA have had they've had propensity to be arseholes in the past.
Oh, absolutely.
And not really care. And it can't go with unnoticed.
This can't
one of the biggest.
This can't help EA either.
No, exactly.
No,
my pre-order's now gone. I mean, the thing is, if you pre-ordered it in store, you had to pay a fiver. And not everyone's getting that back as cash. Some people did if they went back in yesterday, I believe.
And that's what I was good, because I'd written it in the article that I'd understood it, that you're not getting a cash refund, you're getting game credit refund plus an extra £5 for the inconvenience.
Yes, so I believe, but I think that there were conflicting stories, but I think if you got in early, you got your cash refund plus £5 voucher. Online you don't have to obviously put any deposit down, so I've just got a £5 voucher to use, but that could well be worthless. I mean, you can only use it I think it's only by the end of the month or something, so there's probably not going to be a game I want, because I want
buy a Vita. Just go and buy a Vita.
No.
Go on.
Anyway, so it's kind of a sad day, because obviously Game's a massive brand for the gaming thing, but I think gamers just buy their games where they can get them cheapest.
Aye.
And there you go. So that is all the news for this week. Let's get on to some picks. Right, I'm intrigued about yours, Ian, because I want this. So what what is it?
It's called Moom. It's been out for quite a while, and I've always resisted trying it. When Windows 7 came out with its kind of fancy Windows management, you can snap to half the desk, half the desktop, and all that kind of good stuff. And it was doing AeroPeak? Is that the right name? It was all that peak nonsense you could do about the, and you're in the dock and the little pop-ups. I can't remember what they call it. It was all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And what was interesting was it really sparked a kind of, it was almost like five or six products came out for the Mac doing similar things. I think people realised that actually there was more to Windows management than just using Exposé on the Mac. So Moom is a really cheap app, $5. And quite simply, if you look at your kind of little red, amber, green circles, which is all about closing and minimising and maximising, you hover over the green icon, and I can now just very quickly size the app that I'm looking at to the full screen, half a screen, top or bottom. But I can also set up some custom screen sizes or custom app sizes, or I can just show a grid and say draw that to this size. So very quickly you can just draw an app to a certain size, and that is really clever. And it just means see if you fire up two or three apps really quickly, you can just snap into the corners and you're good to go. And you can set it up so there's little gaps between them so that you can, you know, it's all overlaid nicely. The really powerful bit for me is you can actually set up a almost like a pattern. So I can say for podcasting, I'm going to have these four apps opened. Arrange a desktop this way, please. And no matter what I've done beforehand, it just snaps them all into place. So it means nice. For us a certain, you know, and I've done it tonight. I've got my apps opened. I just said, you know, podcast. And it went, and they're all in the right place. And that is really, see, for $5, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, that's a good price as well.
I tried a couple of other ones that were all, you know, demoable ones, and not through the App Store, because I think the App Store is doomed in some ways because of all the sandboxing that's coming. A lot of these apps just won't work via the sandboxing side of things. So I've actually, for a few of these, I've actually just been buying outside App Stores because I think we're in trouble.
I might go and take a look at that then, because that, so of the two things I find most detestable on my Mac so far are its Windows management, which I hate, and I hate its folder merging, which we touched on last week, I'm sure. It doesn't merge.
And I really like the Exposé side.
In a ridiculous fashion.
No, I really like the Exposé side of things. And I guess it's one of these things, I've always loved it. And I know a couple of people that I guess introduced to Macs have loved it. But I do find it can be quite messy. Especially when I've used Windows 7, it's actually quite elegant how you can just quickly resize the windows, and Moom certainly lets me do that in the Mac.
Excellent. So that's manytricks.com/Moom.
Yes.
MOOM. Okay, my pick, confession, I've used it for all of probably about 5 minutes before the podcast. Yet I did pick up on this from another podcast that highlighted it, and because we've been talking about privacy recently, I thought it'd be interesting to show you it. This is called Do Not Track Plus, and it is a browser plugin for Chrome, Firefox, Internet Explorer, Safari across Mac and PC, so the majority of the big browsers and platforms. Effectively, it just sits in your browser and stops communication from tracking, tracking cookies, anything that reports back to base about your activity and your movements and what you're doing online. It stops them, and it lets you know that it stopped them, and it lets you know what it has stopped. So it just sits there, and a little number appears in it basically as you're loading sites, and it tells you what it stopped happening. So it stops all sorts of things. So it'll stop Facebook talking back because of social buttons. It'll stop Google on their plus one buttons talking back. And it'll stop things like Google Analytics and their tracking cookies and stuff. It's probably a really bad thing for all these companies that want to track and websites that want to track analytics and stuff. But it is interesting just to see how much is going on. They highlight the CNN site, for example, which tracks back with 10 or 11 different tracking things.
Good grief.
Even our digital outbox has three trackers in there, would you believe?
Sure not.
Two of which, there's a social button.
And Google Analytics. And
there's Google Analytics and WordPress stats as well.
Yeah.
So there's three things there reporting back. But, you know, so
shameful.
It's going to, It affects. I mean, if you think from our point of view, we don't want people to stop that because it's useful data for us to see what's happening and how they're using our site and whether there's things that can be corrected on a site. But nevertheless, you should be free as a user to choose whether that happens or not. And this is a one way of highlighting exactly what's going on. And there you go. That, so that is called Do Not Track Plus, and you can find it at abine.com, abine.com/dntdetail.php, where you can download it. It's in the show notes, I should have said.
I was waiting for that.
Easier, wouldn't it? Anyway, that's the end of our podcast. So thanks for listening. As ever, you can find out all that we're doing at digitaloutbox.com. Email us, info@digitaloutbox.com, Twitter, Skype as Digital Outbox. I am on Twitter as CheesyUK, and blog at chrishutchinson.org.uk. Ian, where can we find you?
I blog at iand.net, and I Twitter at Sweeper.
Fabuloso. So we will have another cast to you next week, talking iPad 3, no doubt. So we'll speak to you then.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.